for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. At a press conference yesterday, Senator-elect Al Franken said he's coming to Washington not as the Democrats' 60th vote, but as Minnesota's second senator. The ascension of the former Saturday Night Live cast member, author, and liberal commentator gives Senate Democrats a filibuster-proof supermajority, but it does not ensure passage of the president's top priorities, including health care overhaul, cap-and-trade legislation, and financial industry reform. Joining me in the studio to discuss what Al Franken's victory might mean for the Senate and the president, Kristen Jensen, with Bloomberg News, NPR's Ron Elving, Chris Saliza with The Washington Post, and the Brookings Institution's Tom Mann. We'll take your calls throughout the hour, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good
morning. Good morning.
Kristen Jensen, if I could start with you. Tell us about the Minnesota Supreme Court ruling yesterday.
Well, Norm Coleman was looking for a recount of about 4,000 absentee ballots. He was arguing that they were counted differently in different parts of the state, that things were thrown out in rural counties that were opened in urban counties, and that probably favored Al Franken. He was also arguing that, hey, look at the Bush v. Gore case. You know, this should go back. Things should be recounted. Supreme Court did not agree on either level. They were unanimous. They said Al Franken is the winner. He should be certified.
So Norm Coleman could have taken this to the U.S. Supreme Court. How come he didn't?
Yeah, he could have started again in federal court. He came out yesterday and said, I'm not taking this any further. I'm afraid that it will cause disunity in the state. It's time for this to be over. You know, I'm going to move on. The other argument really is that the state Supreme Court didn't leave much of an opening for him to really make a federal case out of it. So if he had proceeded, it just might have hurt him down the road. He still has political aspirations, most people think, so he wanted to be careful about that.
What's next for him, Ron Elving?
Norm Coleman can still run for governor of Minnesota. That's an office he hasn't held yet, although he has sought it before. And he could do that. He's only 59 years old. That's still a relatively young man in terms of politics. And he would like to succeed Tim Pawlenty, who could run again but has chosen not to run again, the Republican governor they currently have, who is perhaps interested in a national stage role in the next several years. So 2010 is an opportunity to run for the governorship, and I think there are a lot of people who expect Norm Coleman to do just that.
Chris Saliza, the argument that these absentee votes should have been counted, that Norm Coleman kept making, why did he carry this as far as he did? There must have been Republicans telling him to let it go.
You know, Diane, I think there were. Privately, although to Republicans' credit, they kept a very unified front publicly. You saw everyone from Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, to John Cornyn, who heads the campaign committee, to Republicans in the state, people like Vin Weber, former congressman and now a sort of party bigwig here in Washington. Everyone essentially saying Norm Coleman just wants what he and the people of Minnesota, always an important calculation in politics, deserve, which is that all the votes be counted, as Kristen pointed out, by a single standard. I tend to think that he carried it a little too far in terms of his own political future. I think Ron is right that there is an opening there in 2010. There isn't an obvious candidate for Republicans. You know, Michelle Bachmann, who is significantly more controversial than even Norm Coleman, has mentioned herself as a possible candidate. He could run for that. That said, if you look at the polling that's been conducted in the 238 days, I think, that span between when the election ended and when Norm Coleman conceded the race yesterday, his public image has taken some hits. Most people wanted him to step aside. His favorable numbers went down significantly. Interestingly, as Al Franken, who started off very negatively, his favorable numbers seemed to go up as this went on. So while I think Norm Coleman does have political aspirations, clearly he's run for a lot of offices, and I think he'll probably run for something else. I don't know if he can do it in 2010 because of the taste that's been left in the palates of Minnesotans about this race.
You're saying had he given up sooner, he might have had more clout going forward.
I think so. You know, there was a recount. There were several legal challenges at the state court. There was a three-judge state panel prior to his appealing it to the Supreme Court. I think the Supreme Court case may preclude him from running in 2010. Though, you know what? Lots stranger things has happened. Let's not forget this is a state that elected a former wrestler as its governor. So I don't want to say it can't happen, but I do think he needs to be aware that his public image, both from the campaign and from the campaign after the campaign, have taken a real hit.
Tom Mann, will Al Franken's victory mean a big change in Washington?
No, not a big change. But nor is it insignificant. Al Franken is one more Democratic vote. In purely nominal terms, it brings the Democrats to 60 with their two independents that organize with them. 60 is the magic vote needed for cloture to shut off filibusters. In reality, there are two senators, Ted Kennedy and Robert Byrd, who are quite ill and have been absent from the floor for a long time. We don't know if either will be able physically to appear for votes on health care, on climate change, on a whole range of important matters. Therefore, you have that problem. You also have the problem that it's very difficult holding all of the Democrats together, absent any Republican support. And if you go after the Republicans and succeed, the Democrats are likely to come along with you. On the other hand, it's symbolically important. And if Republicans are playing a purely partisan game with no credibility, substantive differences attached to a filibuster, I could imagine both Kennedy and Byrd finding their way to the floor and all other Democrats voting together.
Tom Mann, the Brookings Institution. You've also heard from Chris Aleza of the Washington Post. com. He's the author of The Fix. And Ron Elving, he's Washington editor for National Public Radio. And Kristen Jensen, politics reporter for Bloomberg News. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Al Franken is going to be sworn in, I gather, not next week, but the week following when the Congress comes back from July 4th vacation, or is it next Monday?
It's next
soon
week.
As possible.
Next week.
It could
as
be
soon
as early as Monday, but probably next week once the Congress reconvenes.
Okay. And Chris Aleza, what kinds of committee assignments do you think Al might get?
Well, let's remember that he is the Democrats. Two things. One, he is extremely junior, despite the fact that he is the 60th. That does not necessarily help you in terms of the Senate, where seniority is absolutely central. The other thing is, however, Democrats have picked up a number of seats in the last few years, so they've held committees for him. He will not be out of committee simply because he was not seated at the same time as his class. For all intents and purposes, Al Franken will be up for re-election in 2014, just like all of his colleagues. He will accrue seniority in the same way that all of his other colleagues do. So aside from the fact that he is going to be sworn in probably about 245 days, amazingly, after closer to the end of 2009 than the beginning of 2009, which is remarkable in its way, he will essentially fit in on a technical side in the Senate because they've reserved these seats for him.
Kristen.
Well, he said, at least during the press conference yesterday, that after talking to Harry Reid, he expected to be on the Judiciary Committee. So that will be a big one with the hearings for Sotomayor.
Yeah, my understanding.
In addition, he said he would be on the Senate Health Committee, also a big one with the health care overhaul.
One.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he is a junior member, but those are two big committees for him.
As
I understand it, he is going to be on the Judiciary Committee and he is going to be able to participate in the hearings for Sonia Sotomayor just a week from Monday. So that'll be just a few days after he first takes the oath of office. Despite the fact that he's not a lawyer and most of the people on the Judiciary Committee are, he's going to be getting that seat.
Just quickly, I think it is important. The entire campaign for Al Franken was based upon the idea that he needed to convince Minnesota voters that he was a fundamentally serious person, that this was not a vanity race, that despite his background, he was serious about this. He very much played down his celebrity and played up the fact that he was from Minnesota. The first ad he ran in the campaign was an endorsement from his fourth grade teacher. This platform will give him a chance to prove that seriousness. If he comes off as a serious person, asking Sonia Sotomayor serious and probing questions, though he is a Democrat, certainly is almost certain to vote for her, it's a good platform, a good way to get him in terms of burnishing that serious reputation early on.
Did he help himself in developing that serious reputation during this long hiatus, Tom?
He really did. He was in Washington frequently. He had the advantage of knowing which major committees he was going on to, and he's actually kept up with the work of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee and Judiciary. So he's low-key, he's serious, he's ready to go to work.
Tom Mann of the Brookings Institution. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. And in his acceptance announcement yesterday, Al Franken said, "I'm not going to Washington to be the 60th Democratic senator. I'm going to Washington to be the second senator from Minnesota. That's the way I'm going to do this job. I won by 312 votes, so I really have to earn the truth of people or trust of people who didn't vote for me and let them know I'm going to be working for every Minnesotan." And joining us now from his office in Washington, D.C., Norm Ornstein of the American Enterprise Institute. Norm, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Diane.
I know you're good friends with Al Franken. Tell us what kind of a senator you think he is going to be.
I've been close friends for more than 20 years with him, Diane, and I think he is going to defy a lot of expectations here. Al is a policy wonk. He is deeply engaged in issues. He's not going to get bored with committee hearings or markups. He's going to throw himself into the process He is well organized, a workhorse, and people expecting a bombastic comedian or somebody who's doing this on a lark as a frivolity because he was bored doing show business are going to find out that he is going to be a surprisingly strong member of the Senate who will actually contribute quite a lot, I suspect, in important policy areas like health care.
All right, Norm, but he has written some pretty harsh stuff about some of his soon-to-be fellow senators. How are they going to react to the former comedian? How is he going to somehow make himself into someone that whose background they can forget?
Well, you know, he mentioned the other day, and I've had long discussions with him about this too, the analogy with Hillary Clinton. He comes with a kind of scrutiny that I think only Clinton got as a new senator. And remember, she had to deal with, on a regular basis, a large group of people who had voted to remove her husband from office, many of whom had said very harsh things about her in her capacity as First Lady. So there's some delicacy here. What ended up happening, of course, is that Clinton, among other things, developed a very strong working relationship and then a personal relationship with the likes of Lindsey Graham, who had been one of the managers from the House on the in the impeachment process. It's possible, if you have the personality, to be able to work with people. And Al can be a combative person, but he, for example, has very good relationships with conservatives like Gary Bauer or G. Gordon Liddy or Rich Lowry. I don't think he'll have any difficulty finding allies and seeking them out on the other side of the aisle. There's going to be a period of each side feeling each other out, and Republicans are obviously feeling wounded that they've lost a seat that they thought they were going to win.
Chris.
I agree with everything Norm just said. I also think, however, that just like Hillary Clinton, in a way, did fit in far better than people thought within the body, she was used by Republicans time and time again to raise money, to rally their base, to say, Hillary Clinton, she was the new Ted Kennedy in many ways. Well, with Hillary Clinton now as Secretary of State, I would suggest Al Franken will be the new Hillary Clinton in that regard, that Al Franken is in the Senate, he and his liberal buddies, that they will use that regardless. And like I said, I don't disagree. I think that that Al Franken proved himself to be a serious person, as Norm said during the campaign. But in some ways, that's apart from the politics of it, which he will become a huge fundraising tool for Senate Republicans.
Kristen?
Yeah, absolutely. Republicans have got to be teeing up the fundraising appeals on this, looking at him as the new Ted Kennedy. And also, if you look through his issues on his campaign website, he is reliably liberal. Everything that he goes through, you would just expect that would be an easy target for Republicans.
Give me some examples.
Well, so he's got all kinds of new tax credits. He's got all kinds of working for closing the loopholes on corporations. You know, that's how he's going to pay for things with the new tax credits. He is reliably liberal on things like ethanol, all of that kind of stuff. And I kind of went through every issue and didn't see anywhere where he would diverge from Obama, and certainly some places where he might go further.
Norm, would you agree?
I think he is a liberal, but I'll tell you, Diane, you know, I was on his radio show when he was doing it for 2 or 3 years once a week, and we would do a little comedy here and there, but mostly it was serious discussion of issues. He, when it came to Iraq, with his trips with the USO and his relations with America's troops, even in discussions of things like health policy and the like, I think in the end he's going to be a little more pragmatic than people think. It's not going to be quite as reliable, and that doesn't mean, you know, of course, in some cases it may be that President Obama is going to have some difficulties with some of his own senators from the left. But I suspect you're going to find somebody who's willing to look for compromises in a whole lot of places.
Give me some of the issues, Norm, that you see as most important to Al Franken.
Well, one, he has this deep emotional bond with troops because of those trips that he took. He was hoping that he could play a role in veterans affairs and in things like rehabilitation at Walter Reed and the like. He's developed through his campaigning some very close relationships with the Indian tribes in Minnesota, which is a fairly important thing. So he asked for and got on Indian affairs, and my guess is he's going to throw himself into some of those areas. He's on health, education, labor, and pensions, and I think the health care issue is one he spent a lot of time thinking about, and so I think he's going to try and really have his imprint there, although he's obviously hitting it in midstream. I think he's going to be very sensitive to also some of these concerns about Minnesota. He spent 2 years immersed in traveling around the state. He wants to show that he is a senator from Minnesota. So I expect we're going to see a lot of focus on some of those, you know, the larger issues that may matter to them, which include energy and health, but also some of the more parochial things.
Now, Tom Manton, usually when you get a first-term senator, doesn't that person usually keep his or her head down for quite a while?
They're advised to do so. All don't take that route, but certainly that's what Al Franken has in mind. You know, he nor mentioned the sensitivity to his standing in the state. He won by 312 votes, but perhaps more importantly, he got 43% of the vote. There was a third candidate, and 57% voted for someone else. So Al's got a lot of political work to be done back in Minnesota. So I'm really looking for a very serious demeanor, sort of hardworking stand. Kristen is right about many of the issues. We haven't mentioned card check, the labor union issue, which is something he's absolutely committed to vote for. But it's important to remember, yes, Ted Kennedy is used by the Republicans and has for decades as a fundraising tool, but Ted Kennedy is probably the greatest legislator the Senate has seen in a generation. It's possible to live both worlds, and that's what I expect out of Franken.
All right. And Ron Elving.
I doubt the Republicans are going to be able to make the kind of hay from Al Franken's presence in the Senate that they may be thinking. First of all, I don't think that he is a bête noire for people out in the country. I don't think people are scared of him the way they were scared of Ted Kennedy or they were scared of Hillary Clinton. There seemed to have been a unnatural fear among a very large number of people until she became a senator, until she became Secretary of State, that Hillary Clinton was some sort of crazed harridan who was going to run the country off the rails. I don't see that kind of fear attaching to Al Franken. If anything, I think he needs to establish that he is someone to be taken seriously. And when he does, I don't think that will necessarily make him a great fundraising target.
Could I mention a possible model for him? And in the House, that's Barney Frank. I would argue Barney Frank is among the top two or three members of the House legislator. He's brilliant. He's well informed. He runs his committee fairly. He also is one of the best debaters on the floor. Amazingly witty. His quips can be devastating. Al can't start like that, but within a year, he ought to settle into playing a significant role on the floor as well.
And finally, Norm, what advice have you given your friend Al Franken on how to be a senator?
We've really talked a lot about the unique circumstances or the unusual circumstances of coming into the body as a celebrity. It's the sort of thing that Bill Bradley had, as with Hillary Clinton. And really what you want to do is to immerse yourself in the details of the body, become a workhorse, appear at every markup session, play your role quietly, don't get in front of the cameras, leave it to others, understand the prerogatives of the Senate and that you are a new person for months until you've got your colleagues privately saying what a pleasant surprise it is at how good you are in this body. Build those internal relationships, and then it will alter the image that people have of you externally. And I think, you know, that may be in some ways obvious advice. It's difficult when you're getting that kind of scrutiny, but I think it's advice he's taking to heart.
Chris.
Norm's point, I think, is so important. The Senate, for anyone who's watched it on C-SPAN like a nerd like me does all the time or has spent any time watching it in person, is the most collegial of bodies. You would be stunned by the people who you see chatting and laughing. You would think they would never have a kind word to say to one another. If Al Franken can go in there and not be the Saturday Night Live Al Franken, which I don't think he will be the serious policymaker, there will be a lot less of an appetite for senators who, frankly, consider each of themselves a celebrity in their own right, to be totally honest, for them to give a reporter like myself a quote that says, Al Franken's too big for his britches. If he can go along and get along in the Senate, I think it will help him immensely in terms of not only internal Senate relationships, but in terms of the way in which he is cast by reporters. If all of his colleagues say, look, this guy has surprised us with the depth of his knowledge. You have someone like an Orrin Hatch, for example, a friend of Ted Kennedy, someone who is a conservative Republican, but not someone who is just a rank partisan. If you have an Orrin Hatch saying, look, I'm surprised Al Franken has come in and he's taken his job seriously, mm-hmm. and you know mm-hmm. we have no qualms with him, that will help him. Both internally and externally.
Norm Ornstein, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. I'm going to put you on hold because I know our producer, Jonathan Smith, wants to talk with you a bit more. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure, Dan.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And let's now go to Syracuse, New York. Good morning, Jeffrey. You're on the air.
Thank you. In all of the talk, especially the last few days, I have yet to hear, even on Comedy Central or NPR or PBS, any mention of Al Franken's educational background. I believe he graduated from Harvard with a rather serious degree, I think, related to the social sciences or history or something like that. I have yet to hear his educational.
Well, now the whole world has heard it. Kristen?
You're absolutely right. He went to Harvard, and as Norm said, he has shown that he is someone that thinks very deeply about these issues, really gets into them, and can talk about them in a way that people understand and that a lot of politicians respect and that people respect. And so that is something that we may be hearing more about.
Ron.
You know, back during the 1988 campaign, in addition to a lot of other satirical things that Al Franken did, he got up on the Saturday night before the actual election in November 1988 and from a blank whiteboard drew a map of the United States and outlined the states that he thought Mike Dukakis still had a chance of winning. Acknowledging that he was an underdog at that point, he drew a map with pretty good approximations of the shapes of the states he was talking about in all regions of the country, and writing in all the electoral votes and explaining how he could get to exactly 270. It was a remarkable performance. And right there you knew this was a guy who was exceptionally bright and numeric as well as literate and somebody who was extremely interested in politics.
Diana, I have a personal experience to share with you. One day at Brookings some years ago, I got a call. It was Al Franken. He was doing research on one of his books. We think of these as just harangues, but they're, if you look at it, they're pieces of policy analysis within him. He was trying to assess a conservative case for that Congress always wants to spend more than the president, especially President Reagan. And so he was trying to make sense out of some CBO charts and analysis. So he called me up, and we spent an hour and a half sort of plowing through the details of it. I eventually looked to see what appeared in the book, and there was a serious point packaged in a lot of humor about this of this weird wonk he found in Washington.
But, you know, that's a good point, Tom. Do you think that Al Franken will put his humor behind him, or will he use it to do the kinds of working himself into the crowd that all of you have suggested he's got to do, Chris.
I think his humor and his ability to think quickly on his feet can work in his favor. I would not advise him to do some of the things he has done in the past that came up in the campaign. But again, that was sort of a different life. I'm in favor of allowing people to be multidimensional. That is, you can be funny and you can also be serious, as someone who has any number of things on YouTube of myself dancing around and, you know, crazy wearing a
really,
feather boa.
Chris,
yes,
you?
They're all out there.
What's the URL?
Yeah, I'm not going to pass that along. But the point being, Diane, is that I think humor can be disarming. I think it can be effective. I think it can be endearing. And he is someone who is funny. He can be funny, I think, in a cutting and somewhat mean way. But I think he can also be funny in just a humorous way. And I think he'd be smart to do that. I don't think, however, he wants to play to type necessarily. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wants to come into the Senate, you know, basically doing a stand-up routine. And look, his statement that you read is a perfect example that he's not going to do this. Al Franken gets that he won by 312 votes, 225 after the recount. So he gets that this is someone, as Tom points out, that lost 57% of the vote. He's not going to. This is not, I believe, a vanity project for him.
Chris Eleze, he's the author of The Fix on WashingtonPost.com. When we come back, more of your calls, your email. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. By the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the Republican Party in the wake of Governor Mark Sanford and Senator John Ensign's extramarital affairs. We talk with Washington Post reporter Dan Bowles. Both Sanford and Ensign have connections to a secretive Christian group called the Fellowship. We'll talk with the author of a book about the group, Jeff Charlotte. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And as we talk about the fact that Al Franken will be coming to the U.S. Senate as either the 58th or the 60th of the senators seated on the Democratic side, we'll go back to the phones. There are two independents, don't forget. Let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Marta. You're on the air.
Yes, Yes, I'm calling. I lived in Minnesota for 15 years during the tenure of Paul Wellstone, who I admired greatly. And I was wondering if your panel thought that given his liberal positions that he would be able to follow in the footsteps of Paul Wellstone and reach across the aisles and accomplish some of the things that he did so quietly and so competently. Hmm.
Kristen.
Well, Franklin has certainly mentioned Paul Wellstone as someone that he admires. He mentions that he'd like to get through, in fact, the Mental Health Parity Act that Paul Wellstone really was in favor of. And if you look at the issues again, he mentions he is a member of four unions. You know, he would be on the side of labor. All of these different things, I think you really will see him following in those footsteps.
All right, to Fort Worth, Texas. Good morning, Alan. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. I, too, as a regular listener to Al Franken, when he was on Air America Radio, I found him to be extremely thoughtful and a thinking man with serious ideas about how to resolve several of the problems this nation faces. And I, frankly, look forward to him being in the Senate as a strong voice. He may lay low, as several of your guests have suggested, for a little while. But I think his overall knowledge and policy positions bode well not only for Minnesota but for the nation at large. I think he's going to be a strong supporter for the president, and I'm looking forward to him as a senator.
Thanks for calling, Alan. Ron.
I think when we say that he should play it cool at first or lay low, that's mostly about profile with respect to the Senate floor, with respect to media. He should not be out in the hallway seeking every camera crew that walks down the hall. He should be establishing his bona fides among his colleagues and among the people in Washington who observe the Senate on a daily basis. I think that's what he has resolved to do. We saw that in the spirit in which he took his victory yesterday and in the way that he has campaigned, the way he has conducted himself since November. And I think that's what he does plan to do. But down the road somewhere, the old Al is going to emerge and he is going to show that flash of wit. And the longer he can delay it, the more effective it will be when he does unleash it.
Here's an email from Mike in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He says, I think a great upshot now that Al Franken is in the Senate is that Democrats finally have someone who can go on talk shows and be the funny and happy warrior. Much like Barney Frank excoriates reporters and pundits for foolish questions and pointless political posturing with wit, Al Franken can play that role as senator. As an added bonus, his known show business career makes him nationally familiar without having to serve in the Senate for 20 years, Chris.
All true. That said, I keep returning, and this is just because of the political lens that I see things through. I think that Al Franken would do well to follow the advice of his friend Norm Ornstein, which is to go to every markup, give if he's going to give a speech, make sure it's on policy, a thick, detailed policy address that shows his engagement with the issue. I don't think at the start it would be smart of him to go on cable talk shows, to go on that sort of thing. Does it to go on, for example, an influential program like the Diane Rehm Show? because it will put him out as a target, which is exactly what he doesn't want to be. But I just wanted to tell, because Tom mentioned it earlier and we just heard it again, I want to tell a very quick Barney Frank story. I, as a younger, much less experienced reporter than I am today, had an interview with Barney Frank in which I had 10 or so questions and 20 minutes to ask them. I went into his office. He was working on something else simultaneously. I went in. 4.5 minutes later, he had answered all my questions and I left. So in a way, I'm hoping Al Franken isn't Barney Frank in his brevity from a reporter's perspective, but I get the comparison.
All right. Here are two questions about how long it took to get to this point. First one from Sonia in Miami Beach. How much did this protracted race cost the taxpayers of Minnesota? And second from Mary in Farmington Hills, Michigan, 8 months to decide an election is ridiculous. election contests should always preempt other cases, be heard first, with judges having to reach a decision in just a few days. Is there a move afoot at either state or federal level to hasten the hearing of election lawsuits?
I think the timing of the hearings was not the problem. The problem was the legal issues involved and the requirements for due process, if you will. Yes, it was millions of dollars were spent by the candidates, by the state. It took a tremendous amount of time. Diane had actually pointed out one continuing problem with election administration. And mind you, Minnesota is clean. The law is well developed there. And everyone argues there was no fraud involved. This is really fair and deliberate. But there were a lot of absentee ballots and a lot of disqualified, spoiled absentee ballots. We have more and more convenience voting. That means no excuse absentees. And people are making mistakes and their ballots are not being counted. Mm. And this is one of the big issues that was involved in the contest itself. That's where we need to make some improvements. But we also need to think about some provisional seating and not to allow the state to be represented.
Kristen.
And that was an issue that came up a lot during the Supreme Court arguments, because there were people who were deciding whether an absentee ballot should be counted and kind of following the rules better. So it wasn't that they were committing any kind of fraud by throwing out more of these absentee ballots, but they were just following the rules to the letter of the law. And the problem is that that has to be balanced then with the desire to get more people to vote. And certainly absentee ballots encourage more people to vote.
All right. To Richard in San Antonio, Texas, thanks for joining us. Go right ahead.
Yes, I'm wondering what impact Al Franken's victory will have on the Republicans. You know, up until now, where they had the possibility of filibustering legislation, will this make the Republicans a little more amenable to compromise and working with President Obama?
Ron.
I'm going to guess that it will not. That the Republicans will be pretty much the same group of people with pretty much the same psychology about all of these issues and about the dynamic of the Senate next week when Al Franken is there, as they were last week when he was not. Now, there may be some calculations at the margin. As Tom said earlier, this is one more Democratic vote, and it's one more Democratic vote that, with the independents and everybody showing up and everybody in place and everybody in line, will give the Democrats the ability to shut off debate with just their own votes. But when is that going to happen? Mm-hmm. Conceivably never. And so the Republicans still have roughly the same shot at delaying action, filibustering, making the Democrats compromise with at least a handful of Republicans. And that's the other thing we should observe, is the Republicans are not absolutely a monolith. They're a very well-organized party with a lot of party cohesion. But there are three or four or five people who have a tendency to wander off and make deals with the Democrats. The two women from Maine, conceivably you could also see, say, George Voinovich on his way out the door from Ohio be amenable on some issues, or in Hatch on some issues. Depending on what you're talking about, you can pull over a couple, three Republicans if you don't drive too hard a partisan bargain. So the trick for Harry Reid is hold together virtually all your Democratic votes, but still don't be so partisan that you can't pull over a handful of Republicans.
Chris.
What I heard yesterday in the wake of the Coleman concession and the Franken victory from Republicans, and let me caveat this by saying it's a little bit of trying to make lemonade out of lemons. That said, what I heard from Republicans was, this makes very clear to anyone paying any attention to politics that Democrats now control everything. They have a 40-plus seat majority in the House. President Obama is obviously in the White House. And they now have this 60-seat margin that now there is no debate about who is in control in Washington. If the economy does not improve, if the healthcare debate goes downhill for the president, if the climate change debate goes downhill for the president, there will be no debate over who is driving the train in Washington, and that will help them delineate and make the case to voters. Again,
I think, blame Democrats.
Exactly. And blame Democrats. The issue there, Diane, is would every person I talk to, if they were honest, say they'd rather switch places with Democrats and have 60 seats in the Senate, a 40-seat majority in the House and the White House? Of course. You have to make the argument that you can make, but that's the argument that they're making.
That's exactly right. The Republicans, unfortunately, are in a position of hoping for failure on the part of the government. And that's a very awkward position to be in. Yes, Democrats are responsible, but Republicans unfortunately put themselves in a position where they're kind of rooting for failure with the economy and with other matters.
How much more likely, if any, does Al Franken's presence mean for the president's programs on health care, on financial reform, on any of the myriad of issues facing the country?
Well, it's one vote out of 50 or 60 needed. There could be some individual votes where one additional Democrat can make a difference. But for the most part, his effectiveness will be seen in his personal activities on the committees and on the floor.
All right. And here's an email from Ed, who says, Al Franken has told us he will be a Paul Wellstone senator who was a strong proponent of single-payer health care. Will Al be just as strident as Wellstone on this issue? After all, Paul Wellstone, on day one, approached Bush 41 and established himself as a political foe. Kristen.
Well, Al Franken has actually addressed that issue and said almost exactly what President Obama has said, which is, if I was sort of starting from the beginning, I would love to have a single-payer system. I think it would be the best thing that we could do. But he says, you know, given the realities, that isn't really what we can do. And he said he will push for universal health care as soon as possible. Again, he's right with Obama there. There are some issues where he maybe more liberal than many of the Democrats, you know, negotiating with drug makers for Medicare, things like that. But he is probably not going to be a strident voice for
us. At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Chris.
You know, it's an interesting question of the Wellstone-Franken comparison. And my initial read on it from a political perspective is Al Franken will not be the liberal lion in some ways that Paul Wellstone certainly was. That said, I just jotted down a handful of names. Minnesota is not a place where you can make a predictable assessment of the electorate in terms of, oh, this person is too conservative for the electorate, this person is too liberal. Paul Wellstone, an unapologetic liberal, gets elected, and I believe, and polling would suggest, that he would have won the race against Norm Coleman in 2002 had he not been killed in a plane crash. This is a state that also elected Rod Grams to the Senate, a very conservative member of the Senate. This is a state that elected Jesse Ventura, I've mentioned before, wrestler turned politician. I would not even attempt to describe his politics in a neat box. It's a state that elected Norm Coleman to the Senate, a former Democrat switched to Republican, and now it is a state that has elected Al Franken. So it's hard, I think, to put the ideology, the how you could be perfectly in line with Minnesota voters, because they have been so all over the ideological map. I think in some ways they respond to personalities. If you go down that list, what you've seen, with the possible exception of Rod Grams, Wellstone, Ventura, Coleman, Franken are all personalities, big personalities, whether you like them or not. But it's a fascinating piece of history.
Right. Yes, and even Rod Grams was a TV personality. But look, there is one way that Al Franken, I think, does change the liberal dynamic in Washington, at least at the margin, and that is that now that there is nominally 60 for Harry Reid on a filibuster vote, and because that is going to put this added pressure on the Democrats that they are in charge, they are responsible, you're going to see some of the liberals in the House who have been lectured for years about how they have to back off and they have to give the senators room because there's this 60 vote thing and, you know, life is just really hard in the Senate. They're going to feel that they have been, in some senses, liberated. And they're going to want to know why Harry Reid can't line up his Democrats and why it's the Democrats in the House who always have to give in conference and why they can't have the bills in the form they'd like to see them.
And, Diane, that's going to show up in conference committee negotiations. After each chamber passes its own bill, House conferees are going to be less willing to simply go along with elements of bills because the Senate leadership says we need that.
So what are you saying as far as the entrance of Al Franken and on the Senate side and Harry Reid? What are you saying about that relationship?
I think this makes life more difficult for Harry Reid, even though in a sense it's supposed to make everything easier for him. I think in a way it's the opposite. He's already got an enormously delicate balance. He's got all these Democrats who are up for re-election in 2010. They're all worried about how much they're going to be exposed because of all the change going on in Washington, big debts, big spending. They're going to be a tough group to keep together, and Al Franken is just going to put greater pressure on Harry Reid. Still, we've said it before, does Harry want that vote? Yes, he does.
Well, and we shall see how it all plays out beginning next week when Al Franken becomes the second senator from Minnesota to come to Capitol Hill. Thank you all so much. Kristen Jensen, Ron Elving, Chris Eliza, Tom Mann, and, of course, Al Franken's good friend, Norm Ornstein. Thank you all. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.